Hello, I'm Colin Baker, known to my friends as Old Sixy, the sixth Doctor in that wonderful series Doctor Who. And I am proud to tell you are listening to me, and also Gallifrey Public Radio, the radio that brings you everything from Doctor Who to Rhino Wants a Wife, which is a book written by Lucy Baker, my daughter. It's a children's book. You can get it from fbspublishing.co.uk, and it's about a rhinoceros who is lonely and wants a wife, and it's illustrated by my other daughter's boyfriend, and it's a bargain. Buy it!
I'm C.M. Magaña from the Strange and Unusual podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and beyond. Your GPR hosts are Jay Witten.
Safety measures are for chumps who don't know what they're doing.
Kier Hansen.
Oh, hold on. I saw it on my mixer. I turned up the suck. Hold on.
And Haley Malley.
I feel like I might need to carb up for next week's episode.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do discuss recent news, episodes that have already aired in their home territories, and the occasional interesting rumor. But don't worry, if we look too far into the future, we'll give you a fair warning.
Welcome to episode 290 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we've come to understand that Series 11 will be all about a sleepy little rural planet where nothing unassuming ever occurs until the day the Doctor arrives and learns that every inhabitant has a deep, dark, horrible secret. Cue the creepy, ethereal music. I'm Haley.
And I'm Kier. And this week, we share the last of our panel conversations from Regeneration Who 4 this past spring, where we had a discussion about our incoming Doctor Who showrunner, Chris Chibnall, specifically. We titled it Broadchurch in Space, and because given his extensive curriculum vitae in emotionally charged, gripping dramas, as well as some experience working with Doctor Who and Torchwood credentials, we wanted to consider what sort of influence that this body of work, along with all of the cast and crew that he was bringing along with him to BBC Wales, as we've seen, have had over the tone and the themes and the direction of how Series 11 is going to turn out. We had a great group of people to join Haley and I on the panel here. Irene Richards, we had Brian Biggs from the Whovian Running Club, Charles Martin from Happiness Patrol and Space Javelin, Ian McCann from Compendiums Books and an upcoming podcast that he's got in the works. So really a nice set of voices and minds to discuss what we thought of Chibnall's body of work and how we thought that would translate into running this particular season with all attention on our 13th Doctor. So yeah, here you go.
Obviously, as the title implies, we called it Broadchurch in Space. That's something that's obviously freshest in our minds. And that idea of an intense, character-intertwined, puzzle piece drama. Say what you will about Series 1 versus 2 versus 3 or what have you. But right off the top, because that is the freshest wound, does this bode well or unwell for what we think he might bring in content, crew, and spirit?
I think, well, I have a lot of thoughts on this, but obviously to answer the question about crew, he's already brought one extremely prominent person from Broadchurch into Doctor Who, and that's Jodie Whittaker, right? And can David Tennant be far behind? So there's that. But as we have learned from Stephen Moffat, being a brilliant whatever in one area does not always translate perfectly into being a brilliant something else on the same show. Now, he was showrunner on Broadchurch, and it was a huge hit. Grace Point, a little less so, although I'm always grateful for Grace Point because it was filmed in Victoria, where I live, and I got to meet David Tennant for free, so that was cool. But the but he's had a, I think it's fair to say that his work has been a mixed bag so far, but he knows how to do and produce television, hit television.
Okay.
Doctor Who's future depends, as much as we love it, it depends on attracting mainstream viewers, and he's shown he can do that.
Okay.
So I think that he was a good choice from that point. Some of the things that we've heard about that we'll talk about a little later, like the writer's room possibility and all that sort of thing, suggest to me that he's going to take quite a different approach on this show versus Broadchurch. And so it's even more of a question mark. You know, you could just look at his work and say, well, it's going to be like that. But I don't think so.
Well, and you say the writer's room. One thing that has me concerned is we don't know who the writers are going to be. We don't know who the directors are going to be. People that we've known from Moffat's era that wrote episodes or directed episodes have said they have not been asked back for Chibnall's first season. So we don't know what we're getting.
We've only gotten a very vague indication that there are going to be a large number of new voices at the creative helm from a very diverse array of writers. Who they are, we're not going to tell you. For whatever rationale that's going to be, whether it's for their own protection, so it's a matter of they're not getting media blitzed before their material can even be previewed, let alone, you know, scrutinized as we are wont to do. But yeah, it's I will say that even aside from anything having to do with that transition or the writer's room, which we actually had a panel here last year with Robert Sheeran, we were talking about the viability of that. That was right around the time the writer's room rumor was really starting to kick around. And he put the kibosh on it. This is never going to happen. Because logistically, it's just not something the BBC will pull together. Nor will they pay for it.
No.
It's not just a matter of can you, it's just do you even want to bear that expense? And he said, no, you have to know who you're working with. They're never going to open their wallets to do this.
I always interpreted it as a more collaborative nature. In the last season, we saw Stephen Moffat's name on a lot of the stories, but not solo.
Mm.
And that was a change from previously. And I wonder if that's what we're going to get. It, instead of being every show was started by Moffat and has a varying degree of involvement from him writing wise, I wonder if Chibnall's going to do. I think he's going to do that differently, and it's genuinely going to be more collaborative.
So it shifts more towards showrunner being the executive producer and chief story editor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's going to focus on the production side and let this diverse pool of new writers stand or fall mostly on their own, but with some guidance.
But see, that's what actually gives me hope.
Okay.
About Chibnall coming into it, because as the showrunner, he has already shown that he can do some very complex. You were talking about the puzzle pieces before with Broadchurch. Some of the things that I personally love most about previous seasons of, you know, the new Who, and even the old Who, is these complex, come-out-of-nowhere story arcs that come back around 2 years later, you know, even later in that season or multiple season series later, that it all clicks together, River Song being, like, a very excellent example of that. And they, oh my God, they thought about this years ago and they worked that. Those kind of wonderful puzzle pieces very much excite me, and if he can guide, I won't say a team of writers, but a corral of writers.
Okay.
If he can guide that, saying, "Okay, yes, you can go down this path with this particular episode, but these little Easter eggs, these little breadcrumbs, we need to leave it here, here, and here because I've got a plan for that a year and a half from now." Mm-hmm. If he's able to play three-dimensional chess that way, I think the fans will respond to that positively.
A good number of them. We've had a lot of conversations about, you know, are you, when we meet a lot of Whovians for the first time and we do a little quick Q&A with them, one of the things that we always ask, are you a one-and-done story? You know, are you a bottle episode? Are you a multi-story arc, you know, sequential story arc, because you want something that has the breathing room to have a couple of hours to say what you want to say? Or do you like the Vote Saxon, the Bad Wolf, the River Song, clues along the way, and a big reveal. Oh, it was new. I had it up my sleeve the whole time, and that kind of thing.
I'm in the last camp.
yeah, but your mileage may vary. So it's a matter of maybe he's cognizant of the fact that he's going to need to tick all those viewer boxes in some fashion. Irene, you had something to jump in.
Well, I was thinking about what you had said. I hadn't thought when I first heard about Writers' Room, and I actually did a panel right when Tibnall was announced, and that I guess I foolishly thought he really meant. It was the media said American style writers. He didn't say that. So this is interesting when Rob says, and I've heard other people say the BBC is never going to like do that. So it makes sense that it's going to be some British version of what his idea of a writer's room means, which we, another thing we don't know. Mm-hmm. And I hope he doesn't do Broadchurch in Space. Well, I love Broadchurch, but I just don't want Who to be done in the same way. And he has talked about doing carrying a story all the way through, because there's this rumor about having Who made in a way that it can be binge watch. And
yeah, the immediate access to the breadth of content for the entire season. So, maybe not within series 11, but we might be emerging towards that kind of a distribution model.
That distribution model,
somebody who's trying to run a weekly podcast, no, that doesn't work well for us.
Yeah, right. No,
Chris, just no.
Yeah, no. Everybody has said that, and I've been. I told Keir when we first talked about doing this that I didn't have a lot of positive feelings, and so I felt that I needed to work on getting some positive feelings. So my positive feeling is what Charles was saying, that he's a really good executive producer, and that I think, and I have no basis for this at all, so don't put it on social media. But I have a feeling that he has a good relationship. Charles, you two might have a feeling that he has a good relationship with the BBC.
He does.
And that's really important for the show.
BBC is a well-known political beast. It is a lot of who you know within that corporation. And he's not a stranger to the universe. He's not a stranger to Who. They did kind of promote from within, but it's he's not coming at it. You've seen shows before that'll get a new producer. I'm not necessarily talking about Doctor Who or any BBC shows, but they'll get a new producer and several seasons in who's completely new, and they're bringing a fresh perspective to it, and it usually crashes because they don't understand what the fans are looking for. They don't understand what has made it so successful. They just want to put their own artistic spin on it and kill everything that's good.
Well, you're bringing us to an excellent second step to leap from, and that has to do with his back catalog within the Hooniverse and along the periphery. So, I mean, if you want to take it chronologically, I mean, you're going back to Doctor Who. You've got Ten and Martha in 42. I mean, so here we go. We're dealing with a pairing, with a relationship between doctor and companion that is very affable, that is very electric. Team Martha all freaking day long, but it's a crisis situation. Ship headed into the sun, kind of a thing. You know, and the saving of as many lives as possible, and a lot of the emotional and philosophical dilemmas to that. Then you get into things like Hungry Earth and Cold Blood. So this is core construct of Who, past and present, because you're bringing back. He was responsible for overseeing the bringing back of the Silurians. So, and doing so in a way that's not going to completely crack the fan base in half. It happened anyway, whatever. But at least the brig didn't come in and blow everybody up at the end of it. So, but we're seeing these establishments of his work with episodes that give us an insight into his understanding of the universe and where he feels that he can toy with it. I'm always concerned about somebody who is by core construct, a very dramatic writer. I'm a dark writer. Torchwood. I mean, he did an amazing amount of work with Torchwood, but some of these things were really kind of, some of the episodes were very off-putting. You know, I was kind of troubled quite a bit by his first episode for Torchwood, which was day one. It was a nymphomaniac alien kind of thing. That bugged me, you know. The series bugged me a lot on an emotional level. We're not even counting Children of Earth. But, so, with that being said, with the span, everything from Power of Three, Magician's Apprentice, most recently, and those things, and then obviously the Torchwood work, Do we feel that he's demonstrated adequately that his command of the universe is sound? Or is he a gimmick writer because he wants to play with dinosaurs in a spaceship?
Didn't he do Cyberwoman too?
Yes.
Yeah. What he has demonstrated, to keep it positive, what he has demonstrated is great range.
Okay.
Across his stories. He's done Core Construct, as you say. Mm-hmm. He's done 42 is a super stylized episode.
Yeah.
Almost like a Christmas special, let's do a parody of a different show.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. I think he's shown great variety. I caution people that just because you didn't like a particular story that has his name on it, you need to remember that many people were involved in that story. And I think a lot of the objection the fans had to The Hungry Earth and all that was the new look, which he had absolutely nothing to do with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not part of his that's not part of his responsibility. If you look, if you peel that away, you get Neve McIntosh. No, which is pretty nice. If you peel that away, what you get is a story that resonates very strongly with the 1970s story. So I feel like he knows his lore. He is a old school fan, and while he's not afraid to mess around with it,
mm-hmm.
he knows it.
Okay.
He's not a BBC producer coming in who doesn't know the show. He knows the show.
All right.
And I might be jumping ahead a little bit, but at the same time, he actually has an opportunity if he really wants to play around. We really don't know what the world post-Monks is all about. And what did the presence and then immediate absence of the Monks do to the world? You know, the joke of the show was, you know, it'll be a place where there's no more racism and no one talks in movie theaters anymore. Are now all the oceans filled with cows? What changed in the world? We don't know. Is there some continuity things that can be different because of the Monks? Or is it just going to be like, you know, Amy Pond who never noticed the aliens in the sky or Donna?
I worry that in any instance where, especially referencing continuity and the fact that there have been opportunities, there have been some things teed up that could allow him to run in wild directions if he chose to. I know that he has a set story. I have no doubt in my mind that he has a narrative and he's got a storyline that he wants to convey. And he's gathering the people around him that know him, know his passions, know his inner monologue, and will help him carry that forward. I also credit the guy for being extremely tight-lipped. I mean, he is no Stephen Moffat. So you might consider that a really good thing, depending on where you sit on that. But it has been some time since we've had Tabula Rasa across the program, where showrunner, lead actor, crew, everything down to your set design, your effects team, Milk is now gone out of it. I mean, everything. Murray Gold. Damn it, Murray Gold. So we're dealing with a complete vacuum.
This is the first time this has happened on this scale since Pert. Since we went from black and white to color. That is this big.
Yeah. So the potential for disaster is massive. And the scrutiny that it'll be under. Every misstep is going to be the death of who every single time.
Yeah.
But I do like the fact that he's extremely quiet about these things because I think he's a perfectionist. He may even be a bit of a control freak based on, you know, some of the descriptions about the way his crew would say that he ran his ship on Broadchurch, particularly in the first series. It was media lockdown. I mean, there was, you know, people arriving in dark vans and cloaks and things when they were doing all that because they knew that they had something that was going to be this amazing whodunit, and he was not going to let that squeak. So I think it unraveled a little bit by the time he got to the second and third series. People got more savvy about set reports and things like that. But
Yeah.
So Ian's had a chance to race down from his photo op and join us.
Sorry, Peter Capaldi, Michelle Gomez had me tied up on the sixth floor. I kid you not. Anyway.
So you're not complaining.
One thing that I think I'd like to toss around the table here has to do with a particular recipe that, as I recognize it, for Who, that needs to be maintained for where the program is right now as far as New Who 2018 going into 2019. And that has to do with this combination of wonder, whimsy, and humor. Every once in a while, with a spike of dramatic danger or heartbreak in there to keep you from getting too many cavities and such. So the question is, has Chibnall demonstrated historically, or are you getting any indication from the information that's starting to slowly disseminate, that we are going to maintain it, that we're going to have that blend of the highs, the lows, the treble, the bass?
Absolutely. He's a very emotional writer. And, the show has traded very well over the last few years in punching us right in the feels, so to speak. And there's two things I want to say about this. Number one is, I think that actually the potential for disaster is pretty low. The BBC not only is entrusting this guy with their biggest moneymaker by far now, but also they let him cast Jodie Whittaker. So they're already taking big risks. Mm-hmm. Corporations don't tend to do that unless they've seen a plan that they think is pretty surefire. Okay. So while I'm not sure that every story is going to work out as well as we'd like, and of course the fans' reaction versus the public's reaction is always quite different, I think the BBC feel pretty safe on this, and I'm already seeing more publicity and push for it than you normally would, and that's probably because of the new casting. But I feel like, and he's let a couple of tiny wisps of steam escape that we'll talk about a little later that I think that give me additional hope. So I'm not too worried about the future of the show, mm-hmm. but the key thing here is I think that the fans shouldn't worry this is too big a change. It will be jarring to us, but the BBC has obviously got a lot of faith, and they must have some reason for that.
Their confidence is what worries me. This is the BBC who didn't think Russell T. Davies was going to do anything, and not until he actually had offices and was doing things that they actually went, okay, well, you go on with that then. This is the BBC that said, oh, Stephen Moffat's not going to do any good. They can't replace David Tennant. We might as well just cancel it, and didn't have any faith in him. So just going all steam ahead with Chris Chibnall, I think it's still a bit, we have not seen a lot from Chris in terms of him. I mean, writing for other shows is great, and I think none of those have been really entirely consistent or been long enough to even qualify to what he could do potentially for a 2, 3, 5 year plan on who. I mean, all of his stories are such a wide range of quality and level of what they're trying to achieve. It's funny, with Russell T. Davies and Moffat, you could see why the BBC would put them into places they did. They both had hit successes. Moffat was the guy you brought in every season to write a really good fan favorite episode. You can see why they brought him. With Chibnall's episodes, you kind of go, okay.
Well, maybe they didn't choose him because of his specific skills as a writer, because showrunner is not just a creative position. It's also an administrative position. True. It's making sure you get all the right people in the right places to tell the best story. So maybe he's...
On budget.
Maybe he had a plan of like, I've got these writers lined up to write these type of stories. I've got, I've been talking to this director. Maybe that's the skill set that he's bringing to the table.
I mean, undoubtedly, Broadchurch is what's got him in the position to be phenomenal success at first season of Broadchurch. But it is interesting because I don't necessarily think Russell came to the BBC with a specific plan as what Chibnall has. Or Moffat. I mean, they had some brewing threads, but it sounded like Chibnall really had put some... He had, almost a couple of years to really flesh out what he kind of wanted to do. So he might have actually had a fully fledged detailed plan, and that probably something the BBC was really
a big
really
detailed PowerPoint presentation?
Yes. He was
all 18 slides, dang it.
Here's my spreadsheet. And there's big finish gaps as well. I thought I had.
Yeah, I mean, I would be very happy if he never gets a writing credit on the show. And his. And
I'm afraid you're going to be
tell us how you really feel, Irene.
I think that he's going to be good doing the executive stuff, and I guess he does have it was said a 5-year plan. I don't know if it's really going to be a 5-year plan. So he has some through storyline, and I know that he's really good at drama. And I don't know about being funny. I mean, I've never seen him do anything funny. I know Jodi is incredible at doing drama. She did Antigone on the stage, and it was mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I remembered that, I said, oh, she's going to be a phenomenal.
She and Chris Eccleston were in a play.
Yeah, she's got a lot of range, and she has really can stand up to anybody. I just hope he got really good writers and lets them write. And
there's also we'll take that the Whitaker tangent for just a second. There's also a demonstration. I was talking about that whimsy and some of the humor that needs to be in there. I think Jodi has a very particular sense of humor. Her delivery. If you've ever seen Adult Life Skills, which is this kind of goofball, kind of odd indie comedy that was maybe 2 years back, maybe 3 years.
Yeah,
back,
I think so.
Where she's not intending to be a comedic role whatsoever. It's almost a kind of a sad sack role, but the way that she plays it is so endearing that it's something that you would say, I could see Tennant with this kind of character, this kind of spin on it. And if that's anything that's going to bleed into the funnier moments or the more comedic or affable moments with the Doctor, then I've got all sense of, but if people are going solely on Broadchurch, I'm sorry. Because her character.
Go watch Attack the Block and Adult Life Skills and just kind of.
Exactly.
It's funny. I was concerned about her because I couldn't really picture her in the role. I had seen most of her previous CV before, but there's something about. I always find my doctor's legs have been a little quirk to them. Mm-hmm. And I thought, in Broadchurch in particular was one of the things that I don't see it. But actually, Jodi herself is quite quirky.
Yeah.
Seeing all the press material I've seen of her, you really get to see she's actually really completely different than what she plays on television. I mean, go figure. But still,
wait, are you saying she can act?
Yes, I know. That's why I said go figure. Well, look, some of the people who play the Doctor are not big actors, so put that out there.
Okay. I'm not too worried about. You're right. You make a good observation that Chibnall is not known for his jokes. But he's not going, that's why he's bringing in this diverse pool of writers. I'm not too worried about the humor. We're not going back to the Douglas Adams era, but I guarantee you we will get some funny because Jodi is quirky and I think she'll do fine. The other thing I was going to say was that, the one thing that we know is that she has a big crew with her. You know, this is the most full the TARDIS has been since the Davison. And this, generally speaking, and I couldn't say whether they're going to do it this way or not, but traditionally, when you have a large crew, what happens is, in a lot of stories, two teams,
mm-hmm.
right? And there has been, Chibnall has mentioned something about how he liked that dynamic in the Hartnell era.
Mm-hmm.
And when he said that, I was like, oh yeah, this will be fine.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, he's in touch with the Hartnell era and the large TARDIS there? Okay.
But that's making one bit of an assumption that these characters who have been described as recurring characters and have never actually been classified in any BBC press releases as companions. Go ahead and play around with your canon, your semantics if you want to, but we can have returning characters all day long, but that's Ian McNeice or that's...
Well, see if one of them's wearing a red shirt, because they're out.
Right. Well, you talk about teams, so you got your away team.
Oh, wrong universe.
So you're talking about literally like Scooby and Scrappy and Shaggy going off in one way, and then Velma and... All right.
Have we discussed this morning's news from Sharon D. Clarke saying that she was going to play the wife of Bradley Walsh's character? So I think that is a bit of a hint towards maybe the Russell T. Davies era, a companion and peripheral relationships. So not necessarily.
In the article, too, it says like she primarily does not travel in it.
Yes,
one of the articles that she doesn't travel with TARDIS. She's the one that
called. Yeah, okay.
She's the jet.
The article was trying hard to press that they were all going to be one big family, but I don't quite.
I've heard rumors. I don't know if there's any truth to it. I would think this would be great that Bradley Walsh's character will be the father of Yasmin something's character, and that the other companion, the male, will be her boyfriend. I don't know if there's any.
It could work.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's lots of family dynamics. That
oh
can
no,
really
we've got
work.
Sarah Jane Adventures in space now. That's what's happening.
Okay.
As long as we have a metal dog.
Well, then I guess that allows to be able to take a slight side road on the conversation and have to do with
with what we feel is going to be the best served dynamic for the show right now. Now, not making any predictions about how our 13th Doctor is going to come across, not making any predictions about how many on-world or off-world, or maybe that is sort of the nature of this particular tangent. And that has to do with what's going to be some of the best thing when you have such a substantive sea change that that you're willing to take some risks on certain things, but all right, we're going to have to stay on planet for a little while. And maybe, you know, and this goes back to what you've been hearing in recent news about, we're going to have a lot more historical pieces. Okay, we're going to move around within the Earth timeline for a little bit.
See, this is more Hartnell era.
Yeah,
it really
it's starting to really smack of that. So the question becomes, is this something where this is what our current audience is primed for? This is where we are being more socially aware. Our circle of awareness is now starting to understand the overlapping points with everybody else's circle, and that... that global community mentality is something that means, okay, maybe we need to have some global time with this program. Where do you feel we are?
I think if there's any point in the time of the history of the Earth to be promoting togetherness, it's right now. So I think, I mean, we tend to forget and think, oh, the audience will turn off if it's historicals.
I completely disagree.
No. I'm saying that's what the common perception is. But we're series 11 of a series. Most modern audiences are going to know whether there's a previous 10 series. So this is just going to be something mixed up. This is going to be something new and just something fresh. I mean, that's the whole point of the shakeup, is to make a difference. So if they bring some historicals in it, why not?
And there's nothing saying it's going to be the entire thing. No, that's not quantum leap in a TARDIS.
We know the Daleks are going to come back.
But at the same time, the historical dramas right now, if you just turn on Hulu right now, 90% of what's there is historical dramas.
Yeah.
So there is it's a trend. It's what's wildly popular. It's what a lot of fans want right now. And even though a lot of those are being put out right now are crap and they're not historically accurate by any stretch, master's degree in history, they're not even close to accurate, but they're entertaining as hell.
Sure.
And so if we are on planet and, you know, and they're giving us some great historical, we already know Alan Cumming is coming on to be James the First.
Spoilers.
That's going to be
spoilers.
Awesome. That's been announced, but holy crap, that's going to be awesome.
Well, it wasn't announced. It spilled out of his mouth.
Yeah, he's just like, I should not have said that. He totally pulled a Hagrid. I should not have said that.
And yet, Uncle Simply called him in the middle of the night and says, Alan. Bad boy.
Bad.
And yet, oddly, Barrowman has been unusually silent. So this actually, I see this. To be truthful, I see this as a clean break from the Moffat era.
And
I really don't expect any of that space junk that he launched, like the restaurant at the end of the universe.
Jenny, we're not going to see Jenny like show up.
All of that stuff.
No, Jenny got Big Finish. She ain't coming back anytime soon.
Yeah, that's Big Finish's job now to clean up that mess.
So occasionally you're not going to see the cyber brig just whiz by the skyline.
Yeah. Actually, I think it has a lot of potential.
Me and Clara have flown into a star.
you don't want to see the story of how cyber brig becomes handles?
Shut up, Allie.
So
actually, handles was cyber Benton. That's
Bradley Walsh, cyber brig on the streets, taking down crime. I'm there. It's the chase.
So
handles his Danny Page.
I've also heard rumors that Bradley Walsh's character may be a school teacher, and that is another Hartnell.
Yes.
I don't know if it's true.
Okay,
we'll see.
Irene.
Well, so I guess I know some. I've seen some things from set report, so I'm not going to say what they are because I don't want to spoil people.
Respect.
But I have. It's something about the stories that I which was like one of the things that made me feel really good about a direction that they were going in, and that so they could be like really interesting and very strong and very timely. In another aspect of what you were saying about being together, but another thing I'm like. So I think, I do have a little happiness corner.
Well, another aspect that we're kind of, the most obvious aspect, it'd be interesting to see how the 13th Doctor works in historicals because she's not a white male.
Mm-hmm.
It is a whole different ballgame. You know, you always see the doctor taking charge of conditions for time and space, and because he's a male, they automatically assume. But a woman taking charge, there's probably going to be some uphill battles with that. I could see him working with that. I mean, the character doesn't have to be played as a woman, but outwardly appearance to humans
means a lot.
Yes. Yes,
I agree.
So I think, because they've always tried to take care with the POC companions, and that aspect, and them going back to history. So I think it would make sense to focus on that with her as well. I mean, that would be something interesting and different.
And it's not like you can pretend like nothing has changed if you put her in that situation.
I mean, it'd be great if the doctor tried to take control of the situation and don't want to go, sit down, little lady. You know, that would be an interesting thing.
I hope they don't deal with that every week. That's,
no. Yeah, no, it'd be tiresome.
That would be very tiresome.
Yeah. I think they need to have that situation get dealt with and then not come up too much again.
Right. Because we still understand at the core of it, the doctor's approach is to come into the room as if you own the place and wait until you've proven otherwise. So
yep.
We thrive on that. I mean, that's the kind of, I can't wait to see what they're going to, they're coming
in. It's the greatest line in the entire show. Not allowed, I'm allowed everywhere. I expect Jodie will take that out.
Yeah, oh, and she can do it. That's why I brought up the thing about the classic Greek play that she did, because she blows everybody off of the stage. It's like, you know, and it's just...
That sounds dangerous.
Well, it happens
well,
a lot
she,
in Greece. There's a weather is really...
Yeah, you know.
Well,
great lung. She's known about it.
She's playing a very dangerous woman and a fearless woman.
We had a question or something to put into the back. Yes, sir.
I was just going to say something. Obviously, the doctor's woman in Ellen McPheel had episodes set in the past, so I feel like they should only really acknowledge that one time, because obviously it's a TV show. Realistically, every week they would have to do that, so it kind of takes away from the narrative of the show.
Well, I think we'll get it about as often as, oh, it's bigger on the inside. That's probably about how often.
Well, yeah, handle it strong and deftly the first time. Put the kibosh on the naysayers, move on, and just let her own it. Okay. So as far as, so we've been discussing, obviously, the tact and tone. There is also, I'm glad we mentioned the fact that we, bringing historicals into it, if that's going to be something where we're going to see more of them, but not all of it. There is going to be some value to staying on the home front and dealing with some things that are socially relevant at the moment and making sure that we can incorporate those, because Doctor Who has been political since day one, so everybody who says don't bring politics into Doctor Who, you've been watching the wrong goddamn show for 54 years.
You really
I'm
have.
Sorry, suck it. So,
amen.
Suck it, correct.
But we want the whimsy aspect as well,
yeah.
Okay? And that's kind of tough to do if you're getting into some very heady or extremely heavy. Chibnall knows how to do dark. Chibnall knows how to do dramatic. Chibnall knows how to gut people. We've always joked around on the cast that Moffat's the guy you bring in when you want the feels, but when you want the reels, you got to hand it to somebody else. He can't do battle sequences and things like that. He's crap at it, and he knows it. But he knows how to tinker and how to how to be clever. He was the clever showrunner. What do you see in Chibnall's, either his CV, or just where you see things are starting, and where the chess pieces are starting to be set, that tells you what kind of a puppeteer we're in for? If RTD was, I don't know, how do you want to describe him as his showrunner zeitgeist?
Emotions?
Would you call that emotions?
I think so. The man can make you weep like that, man. Every week, just, oh, God, just...
Okay, so if he was going for emotional attachment over his tenure, and Moffat is going for something that takes a love of the classics, brings it to the new, build a fan base, make them appreciate what foundations it stands on, but tell a great story that has some emotional investment, and just be clever, 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 clever the whole time. What are our thoughts moving forward for Chibnall?
Well, for me, I always Moffat was really wonderful at being terrifying. And there were some of the scariest freaking episodes ever are, in my opinion, from the Moffat area, or that Moffat touched previously. And so...
Tell me where Moffat touched you.
Well, I can't. There's a judge that says I can't talk about it. Anyway, I'm interested to see with the drama whether we're going to be... more topical, or if there's still going to be the wide range of emotions from not just the feels, the crying, but also the terrifying.
And I'm hopeful that we'll get the good mix of all of it.
Okay. I wonder if we're going to get more fallout with Chibnall. Like, you know, usually the Doctor's adventure ends and then he goes on to the next adventure. Chibnall has a very different MO with his history. So I wonder if we're going to get
carrying baggage.
Yeah. I wonder if we're going to get to see, like, and this is what happened because of the Doctor's adventure kind of things.
Well, obviously, you know, having the body of work with Torchwood, that's standing in the wake of the Doctor more often than not. Or the instances where the Doctor just can't be there or refuses to be there. Children of Earth, holy hell. But I can see that to a certain degree. That means that every once in a while you're going to take a break from a story that kind of buttons itself well. You might have a little coda moment to look forward to, but now you've got something where the Doctor's component in it ends after about the second act, and you might have the closing 18 minutes of the show without the Doctor in it whatsoever. And now you're just looking at the dust settling and the smoke clear. I don't know. Has that ever been done?
Doctor's left, you saw what happened to people after they left?
That you finished the story with the Doctor already departed.
Well, you had that with the Doctor Light episodes. And so Don't Blink and those...
Love and Monsters,
where it's the churn, the flotsam and jetsam of what the Doctor leaves in their wake, in his wake. And so you have had that for a whole episode. But focusing on one individual. I don't know if I would be uncomfortable with if majority or even multiple episodes, you know, had the last third being, you know, all the reasons why we should be angry that the Doctor's traveling through time and space like that.
Or maybe not.
So we have blissful ignorance that once the Doctor leaves, everything is set right where the Doctor was.
Although Face of Evil dealt with the aftermath of previous Doctor involvement.
Oh, that's true.
Well, I'm thinking if he's doing kind of a season-long structure to what he's doing, if, you know, we have an adventure in episode 2, and then episode 5 comes along, and we're dealing with the repercussions of what happened in episode 2, or something like that.
Yeah,
But at the same time, we did have the Necrosphere with Missy, and so at the end of every episode, welcome to heaven, we did have that. So the aftermath, you know, did my boyfriend kill you? And all of that. So we did kind of have but it was for 30 seconds.
Well, I think the season will be strongly threaded.
Anyway.
I mean, whether it's going to be serialized, no, but it's stronger threading arc-wise, definitely.
But it was before you got in here, we were talking about the he's very Richard good at puzzles. Yeah, we started without you, sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry, you were busy, like, hanging out with big celebs and whatnot.
Yeah,
and being all cool and stuff.
She was eating
a
McMuffin.
Exactly. But we talked about Chibnall was very good at putting the puzzle pieces, laying them out there for everybody, and we're hopeful that we're going to get some of that with 11.
I want to make sure that we've got the conversation in two directions here, because this isn't church by any means. So, yeah.
And I think also, Wolfgang, I mean, we still have seen this, even though we didn't realize that it was aftermath until the finale, right? The opener with Donna and the Adipose, that was an aftermath of the Doctor, but we didn't know that until it's like, oh yeah, we needed Adipose 3 for my, reality bomb. Like, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, good point.
Okay. Other thoughts about, what we've got, on the docket? Adrian?
It's not necessarily has to do with Chibnall, but season 11 in general. We do know several directors who are coming in, specifically and definitely like Mark Tundrai, who did Black Lightning pilot and Gotham. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on what we do know about like other people coming in, what they can do for the show, at least for next.
Gotham.
Okay. Well, as far as, does that give you any thoughts regarding tonality, regarding pace? I mean, we know there was a conscious effort in series 9 to return to the dramatic. We were going to go more long form. We were going to hold scenes longer because that was more of a directorial decision. Rachel actually being a very big contributing factor to that decision because she wanted to have the breadth and scope to be able to say, I need to hang on this for a painful hot minute because this is... This is something that to me says it needs. We're going for pain right now, and I need time to make it hurt. So that was kind of the decision there.
She did a great job with that too.
With bringing staff on of that sort, at least some of the names that we already have, are we getting any inclination of the fact that okay, maybe it's time to punch it up to be something a little bit more quick take. I'm not going to say CW. It's not exactly that rapid fire. But it needs to be some of the directorial choices and things of that sort of telling us we need to punch it up, or do we need to pull it down? If we're doing historical pieces, but we need it to be poppy, how do you resolve those two
things? Black Lightning is, if it's a, I didn't know that, but that Black Lightning is phenomenal, and it's punchy without, but it's not like frenetic.
Okay.
And it's just really exciting to watch. And so if that's one of the direct, I don't know how much he's done, that would be great. I can't stand Gotham, so I don't want to think about
Gotham. Gotham is a tonality decision. I mean, you have to kind of just choose whether that's something where you want to play around in that particular sandbox. But as far as the work itself.
Yeah, if he's gotten people from Black Lightning or from Riverdale, which is phenomenal.
Well,
there's one director who's worked on Riverdale who I'd love to see come do Doctor Who again. Rachel.
Oh, well, duh.
Yeah, she's done a lot of CW.
Interesting that you brought up Gotham. I didn't know about that myself. Back to the question about what kind of showrunner Tim LaBotte. My mind was kind of like great realism. His history CV is mostly about realism, Law and Order, Broadchurch. They're all kind of more turned down tone. And I think Gotham has an interesting job of trying to be kind of a gritty drama, but still play with these fantastical elements.
Mm.
I mean, not to say that Doctor Who is going to be, all about, everyday problems like, what's happening at school. But he has definitely a certain kind of mix to play with there.
Joe?
Oh, I just wanted to, you saying that, like, Chibnall has done all of these kind of, like, contemporary realistic dramas, it just occurred to me, like, Russell T. Davis and Stephen Moffat's primary experience were in writing contemporary realistic
sitcoms and
sitcoms, rom-coms. Russell T. Davis did Queer as Folk. Like, they weren't writing sci-fi. Chibnall is exactly like those two guys. They wrote Doctor Who for fun. They were fans first. And their professional work was all in, just the work that they could get and being, writers doing mainstream stuff. So I think it's kind of like, I don't even know if I could make the connections between Russell T. Davis' previous work and, Doctor Who, Stephen Moffat's previous work. It's so different.
Okay.
And that's like the exciting thing about Chibnall, is not knowing what direction.
That is very exciting about. Actually, you're bringing that up. I think Chibnall might actually have a step up because he did Camelot, and Camelot was relatively. I never watched Camelot myself, but is there any other panelists?
I've watched it.
It was well regarded, wasn't it, for his first season? He only had one or two. So he has had a big fantasy show to his name beforehand.
And it got canceled.
Yeah, it got canceled. Well, and he was
that doesn't bode well.
He also did the pre-work. He did the pre-work on Merlin.
Oh, I love Merlin. Yes.
Yeah, he did the pre-work. His stuff. He wasn't involved when it got to production, but he did the pre-work on Merlin.
Okay.
He's like we've already said, he's got great range. I'm not too worried about the fact that he's focused mostly on contemporary drama because that's where the BBC is at. That's you want to work, you need to do contemporary drama.
Okay, understood. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to share your concern about the whimsy because where I'm experiencing that recently is with the new Star Trek, the CBS Star Trek. And my husband's a long time Trekkie and knows all the original episodes by name, and he can't watch it because he says it's, they would always end on a lighter note in Star Trek. Even the heavy episodes, you have a little bit of banter between Doctor and Spock, and this one is just so, he said it feels like a movie. It doesn't feel like Star Trek to him. So
okay.
I share your concern. Really, I don't know that much. I don't follow like all the little news, but I find the costume encouraging. That seems.
I was about to say the costume has plenty of whimsy in it, right there.
Yeah, whimsy and an eye towards a respect to the past and a deep dive into the future. And I love the fact that that we had this long conversation at another convention about the costume and the fact that everyone was saying, "Oh, it looks just too outlandish, it's too alien." But that it's actually, I mean, all the fundamental pieces of everything that she's been wearing on the set are current moment fashion. You just haven't maybe seen them all assembled in one collective piece.
I saw there's a picture that was taken at this convention of Colin Baker wearing Jody's shirt. Mm. Well, not Jody's shirt. Somewhat larger.
Larger, somewhat larger.
She gets it back in this horrible condition.
Stretched out.
Oh, mate, what's she done to it?
This isn't the date anymore.
Yeah, those pants are been romping around London.
But the but you know he looked great in it, and that to me that means that that's doctor material. Yeah, it's doctor material. It took me a minute, but it's doctor material.
Even with horizontal stripes.
One last quick one, and then we're gonna have to wrap it up.
I wasn't sure about Jody's costume at first, but I realized that it looks like something that someone has spent the last 2,000 years as a man and suddenly a woman in wood dress.
Finally, I get to go to that side of the wardrobe room and all that stuff I don't get to muck with, and it better have some goddamn pockets in it. That's all I have. Okay. On that very quirky odd note, we will wrap this up. Thank you to all of my panelists for joining us here, and please enjoy the rest of your Regeneration Who tour. Wherever you're going, wherever you get there, be well. So there you have it. A great conversation, one of many great conversations we were lucky enough to have over that weekend. And now that we are that much closer to the rather still nebulous autumn start for Series 11, we'll just have to see whether some of these predictions came to pass. Haley and I were just discussing a little while ago the fact that we got some set wrap photos from the crew out there, and the entire cast and production crew all dressing up as Jody for her wrap party. So not really one of our news items for tonight, but just a fun thing to seek out there. We'll make sure that we drop it in the news links just for the sake of ha-has.
Important information that everyone needs.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So damn it if that is all right. So let's just get into the news. Because there really is only one thing to discuss this week, and that's the fact that if you did not beg, borrow, cheat, steal, rob, mug, whatever you had to do to get SDCC badges for this coming year, well, you can kick yourself even harder.
I could have had a badge.
You could have been a contenda. But, so apparently there is going to be considerable BBC presence. Typically we're going to assume this is Hall H, right? That's where they hold the big ticket stuff. And it's going to be essentially a Series 11 Who's Who compendium, because Jody herself will be there. Some of our upcoming cast members, not really calling them companions. We'll have Tosin Cole and Mandeep Gill. Bradley Walsh, as far as I know, has not been confirmed to be there. I don't know if they're still going to see whether or not he can. But we will have our showrunner, Chris Chibnall, will be joining them as well. And I think this is going to be... And Matt Streep is an executive producer as well. So I think they're going to be able to share quite a bit. I have a feeling, just my thought, that they will give us a kick-ass trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Right, along with some tidbits about what to expect for the first block of the season. You know, how are we going to hit the ground running without giving away too much? But maybe from tone, maybe from pace, maybe they might allude to whether or not we'll have a starting season arc. Maybe, I don't know. That's my thought. These are the opportunities. And SDCC. I mean, Haley, you've been to how many of these now?
One.
You attended just your first. Okay. But it is really marketing driven, right? That's really the intent, is to sell you shows that are coming, products that are coming, so on. Okay, so this is showboating. So they're gonna have to come with guns blazing. I'm curious to know who I'm hoping for Crystal D to be the moderator for this, because she has really become, you know, running the Doctor Who fan show and being a critical part of the Time team now for Doctor Who magazine. You know, this is. I think she would make an exceptional moderator for Jody. Although I do have another couple names. I mean, I don't know if Deb Stanish from Barry is going to be. You know, I don't know if she was planning on going to San Diego, but she runs a killer panel. You know.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll fly her right out and
Look
her accommodations.
I would say through public outcry that they would be able to get her on a docket.
Yep. I had a few names that came to mind that I know would be good moderators. I don't know if they're Doctor Who people though.
Okay.
So like Felicia Day or Aisha Tyler.
Aisha both Tyler run a good panel. Awesome. I think that would descend into some fascinating conversations.
Right. But I don't know if she watches Doctor Who at all.
You know, I don't know. I thought she did.
Into a lot of geek content. I don't know if Doctor Who is among it, but she is a fantastic person to have on any panel.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. All right. Well, we'll have to have we'll build a wish list of names here, and listeners, feel free to contribute if you got suggestions for who you think might make a great moderator for Jodi in the States here when she finally comes to visit. So yeah. So
I did hear somebody throw out just bring Catherine Tate to do it.
Oh wow! Yeah, that could be extremely cool. Yeah, I could see that. Although it'd be just as much them wanting to talk to her as her wanting to talk to them. It'd be a right. complete circle of conversation about everybody just geeking out over each other. So yeah, I guess more entertaining for us. but that's again a little bit down the road for us, a little bit to hope for, wish for, and wonder about. But when we convene for next week, we are going to get back into our classic rewatch, into the story that was shot for season 12, but actually ended up as the season 13 opener, Terror of the Zygons. So figure that one out. There's some great story behind that. We'll get into all that in the conversation the next time around. So looking forward to it. I'm always a big fan of the Zygons. I think they're a very versatile villain, and I'm glad that they made the revival too. So this has been episode 290 of Gallifrey Public Radio. So until next week, this is Kier saying Zygons. Oh, calamari, anyone?
And this is Haley saying, maybe I will sneak into Hall H this year. Who knows?
We'll see everyone next week. Allons-y.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.